When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value plays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 126. Going to recap the week that was in Fab, the week 9 Fab period. And in order to do so, my co-host, as always, you can find him on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, man?
So anyways, I'm doing as well as somebody whose audio cord doesn't work, you know, when they show up to their podcast after being gone a week. And also Fab's Cole Sulzer looking for saves. So that's what I'm doing, but I'm actually doing well. Yeah. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm tired because long weekend, but it's good. Good stuff. Fab was interesting. Looking forward to talking about some of the guys on this list and watching Walker Buehler get blown up 3-3 so far.
Brian Reynolds home run. Holy cow. If only Cal Mitchell had done it.
Cal Mitchell. Good old Cal Mitchell. But we'll get into him and many, many more. So let's just get cracking on it. The week 9 week that wasn't Fab, for those that keep track at home, the online championship is the one we use for player movements and whatnot. 12-team leagues to kind of cater to most listeners, 12-team formats. And the top ad of the week was Michael Harris of the Atlanta Braves. Harris, number 14 prospect in baseball, came up from AA, got the call. So far, hitting a 111, 1-for-9 in his short stint in the bigs, but a little bit of power, a ton of speed in the minor leagues. And he went in 154 leagues, as high as 234, as low as a dollar in certain places. So what's your thoughts on Michael Harris? Because I'll be honest, I didn't put any bids in on Michael Harris. There is plenty of outfielders available this week that I felt a little more comfortable with, but I could be totally wrong here.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I mean, it's always really tough with the prospects coming up. There's such a fascinating thing that happens where it feels like even though that there's more uncertainty around them and what their performance is going to be like, and that uncertainty goes in both directions, you know, like they could be really bad, they could be really good, but I think people have that hope, you know, they have that hope that they see in the prospects and maybe that optimism that they're going to do well. Generally, what I do when looking at prospects is people who listen to the podcast know, I'm looking at projections just to get a sense of what they're expecting. I'm looking at like their past, how they've been doing in the season. And the thing that jumped out to me about Harris was the speed. Like you mentioned, you know, the BatX has him for 8 steals, 5 home runs, 253 batting average and 343 plate appearances. So about like an 8-15, 8-14, you know, full season, 600 plate appearance projection, which is pretty good. And you obviously have to factor in that it could be better or worse than that. And then the batting average is solid as well. So he was up there on my bids, but nowhere near where he went in most leagues. I think he was going for, I think he went like in $120 or more in most of, if not all of my leagues. And I was more in like the low 20 range. So missed out on him. Who knows what he could be. The only concerns that I had, like from a more macro perspective, were just he's hitting ninth and he's a lefty. So I don't know how they're going to play him with against lefties or not. And even so, like hitting ninth, there's like a little bit of a limited ceiling there. So that kept my bids out of the range of possibility for him this week. How about you?
Yeah, you'd imagine he's going to platoon with like Duvall or something, because Duvall's been so bad as well. And now it's just a way to like get the platoon in play there, get some speed on the base paths and go there. Yeah, I didn't even put any bids in on him. I just knew like I wasn't going to pay enough. There's a couple of guys we're going to talk about here pretty soon that I was much more intrigued by. So I wasn't there on that one, but I'm usually always, like we talk about, kind of skeptical in the prospect realm of things. So it's why I was just like, nope, I'll let someone else get this. And if it works out, good for you. That was kind of my thought process there. I focused more on teams playing 9 games this week or 8 games this week.
Yeah.
That was where I was focusing on getting those guys for the cheap instead of breaking the bank. And we'll start with the first one here. Christopher Morel picked up in 140 leagues, as high as 99, as low as a dollar. Outfielder for the Chicago Cubs, leading off of late for the Chicago Cubs. And he has a hit in all but one game so far this season. He even went 3-for-9 in the doubleheader on Monday with another stolen base. That gives him 5 steals on the year, plus 2 caught stealing. So they're letting him run wild. Got a little bit of power in that bat. I love what I'm seeing here. He's basically turning into the Rafael Ortega of last year. I guess is his role now. And I was very, very happy to bid on him instead of Harris. And again, could be wrong in the long term, but give me 9 games this week with a guy that's actually already proving he can swing it pretty good, leading off for the Cubs. I'll take my chances there. So I like Morel quite a bit this week.
Yeah, I actually picked him up in my OC because of the 9-game schedule. And also, like, when I look at the projections for him, you know, they're pretty nice. I mean, the batting average isn't high. It's at 226, but the Bat X has him projected in 170 plate appearances for 4 home runs and 4 steals, which if you project out over a full season is a 14-14 season. Which has a lot of value. Like you mentioned, he's been hitting leadoff. I love that comp to Rafael Ortega. That's a fantastic one, you know, with the exception that he bats right-handed. So, you know, they're unlikely to platoon him when they need him. It's obviously a crowded situation there with Andrelton Simmons and Nico Horner and Morel and VR before his freak accident that he had with a training rubber band. But I really liked him a lot. He was only available in one main of mine, and I think I bid like $57, which is pretty high for me. Or maybe it was $47, but he ended up going for a little bit higher than that. Already stole a base today, you know. And as long as he keeps hitting leadoff and playing every day in that lineup, I think there are some nice things that we're going to see from that. I think he only has one barrel, but he does have a 111.7 max EV, which is pretty good for only having 30 batted ball events. So I like it. I like it a lot. And I'm going to go with it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I liked him though. He was definitely kind of top of my priority list too.
Yep. He was near the top for me, and I was very surprised. Like, I guess it shows how sharp some of the leagues were in. Like, even some 12 teamers, it was already gone. Like, it was probably with all the leagues I did fab in, it was probably 50-50 if he was there or not. And I was pretty impressed by that, going, okay, that's some people are paying attention. That's good. So, we'll see how he keeps doing. But, like we both said, he's starting off the week very well in this 9-game week for us. So, let's just keep swinging it, and let's maybe keep you past this week and see how it goes. Edwin Rios. Oh, Edwin, we've been wanting you to do this for so long. Picked up in 126 leagues, as high as 88, as low as a dollar. With Muncy on the IL, Bellinger banged up, Rios is playing nearly every day right now, which is great. Just in the month of May alone, he's hitting 273 with 5 home runs. Still strikes out a ton, a lot, like a lot. But we know the quality of contact that he brings to the table, the barrels, the hard hit rates. The dude's a freak at the plate, and now he's getting the playing time we've all wanted to see. I wasn't as aggressive on him as I thought I'd be, but I didn't really need the corner infield situation as much, which is why I was focused elsewhere. But I love Edwin Rios as long as he's playing. And right now, with, like I said, Bellinger's banged up and Muncy on the IL, it's his gig for a little bit, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see why people are interested. You mentioned the power that he's got. I mean, his projection is for 26 home runs if you extrapolate it out to 600 plate appearances, which isn't nothing. But I also feel like I think one of the challenges overall with Fab, and one of the reasons why I stay away from really big bids unless it's a truly like kind of difference maker player, is that 26 home runs seems like a lot, especially now with the context that we're in. But, you know, just kind of streaming guys for playing time, you know, getting those nine game guys in, getting those eight games, getting those fours in versus the threes, all of those things, like you can generate something similar just by streaming a power bat over, you know, the course of a season. And so I generally don't go in hot for those types of guys. I think my bids were in the low single digits for Rios. Can definitely see it, but there's major weaknesses that we are well aware of. You know, the 38.8% K rate, it's higher than he's traditionally had, but it is at 31.5%. His contact rate is down close to or at the lowest point of his career as well. And I think one of the things to think about too is, you know, he's got those six home runs, which is great. They come on six barrels. And so he's gotten a home run every single time he's barreled it up or gotten some home runs on non-barrels. And so there's a lot of luck at play here. The 359 BABIP when he's a career 257, especially as a guy who hits the ball in the air a lot, I think that BABIP's going to be pretty low. And he's only hitting 263 with that. So the BADX projection is in the low 210s. That could even be high in today's landscape with the batted ball profile that he has in the K rate. So I'm not that interested, but I could see him as kind of a plug and play, but I didn't want to bet. I didn't want to fab a lot because there's just so many dynamics that are going on that have him in the lineup every day right now. I just don't see it happening in the longer term, both skills wise and, you know, him getting played in time consistently.
The Dodgers way. It's just the way the Dodgers do it. And because, yeah, Muncy will obviously slide back in when he comes back, whenever that is. And they're going to keep putting Bellinger out there for now. So it's what it stinks for Rios. That's why I always wanted Rios to be one of those trade packages, like ship him somewhere, let him play. The dude is super talented. So I'll have to kind of wait and see on that one. And maybe he'll get shipped this year. We'll see. But fun to see him get some playing time while he's got it. Kyle Lewis is back after starting the year on the IL, a little bit of rehab in AAA. Picked up in 101 leagues, as high as 157, and as low as a dollar. He's got hits in three of his first four games, including two home runs. He sat out Sunday. The Scott Service basically said, we're going to maintain it throughout the season. It's going to be a lot of days like this just to keep him healthy. And you know what? That's what teams are doing, like with Buxton and stuff now too. These guys that they know are kind of injury riddled, is the way I'll put it. They're taking care of them a little more. So when you roster him, you have to be aware of that. But the talent that Kyle Lewis brings is interesting. So we know the pros and the cons. We've seen it both, Toby. And but we do know that there's a very good ceiling with a guy like Kyle Lewis. So what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he was the guy that I was bidding the most on, just because I think, you know, we've got a 480 plate appearance sample from him, which includes 24 home runs, seven steals. I don't know if the steals will be there this year, given just the injury issues we've seen. And yeah, I'm wondering if that scratch on Sunday, there wasn't a lot of information on it. They just kind of scratched him. And I wonder if that kept the bids lower than they would have been otherwise, because there wasn't a lot of information. And then, as you mentioned, Scott Service had an interview that he did that I think was published in the Seattle Times or some publication at like 5:30 or 8:30 Eastern time, 5:30 Pacific. And then I saw that quote about how really it was just a, let's kind of keep him fresh, not play him too much type thing. And so, you know, again, like I like him a lot if he can stay healthy. I do think he's pretty close to being that difference maker with what we've been able to see him accomplish so far in his career. And so I think it's just a matter of whether he can stay healthy or not. But I liked him a lot as an ad for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had bids in on him everywhere. Like I said, I bid on a lot of outfielders this week. There were a lot available. And
yeah, it was interesting for that reason.
Yeah, there was, like, other positions was scarce, but the outfield, we had options this week. And I liked Kyle Lewis because, like you said, it's, you know, we look at all these different guys, and with Lewis, we've seen it. Like, you know, there's a pedigree there. We've got 480 plate appearances. We know what we should be able to get out of him. Like, there's a floor that's not pretty. We've seen that too. That's what got him demoted last year. But we've also seen the ceiling, which is outstanding from Kyle Lewis. And he's still super young, so you think he could still tap into that at some point in time. So I was willing to take that chance as well. I guess the only concern, if I had to play devil's advocate here, is besides the steals, like you said, due to like the injury, to try to do that, is they still are crowded there in Seattle. Like, if Jared Kelenic starts hitting in the minors again, he might get another shot. Like, there's a lot of dudes up there. But I think it's Lewis's for now. Lewis and J-Rod feel like they should be out there every day, and then they kind of pencil around that. So, we'll wait. I like to go on after him as well. All right. William Contreras picked up in 96 leagues as high as 247, as low as a dollar. Like, I like William Contreras a lot. I had him for a buck a couple weeks ago. But 247 is a bit of a surprise for me, Toby. It's been great. He's a catcher that plays every single day. Either DHs, catches, even played one game in left field. He's got 7 homers on the season, hitting 281. Contact rates are crazy. The barrels and the hard hit. Like, he looks really, really, really good. And the fact they're playing him every day is awesome. They're hitting towards the bottom of the order. For a while there, he's hitting like second, which is cool. But they got him at the bottom of the order. But still, I guess the moral of the story is a catcher playing every day. And that's what got people's attention. I still don't know if I'd pay $247 for that attention. But I was willing to roster him anywhere I could. I just wasn't going to break the bank for him. So what's your thoughts on William Contreras?
Yeah, I mean, he could be a difference maker for the reason that you mentioned. He's playing every day. He's got that catcher eligibility. You mentioned the skills. I mean, the one thing that I'm impressed with just in looking at the underlying numbers, the O swing is much better. So far, and again, we're only looking at 70 plate appearances. Chances are it won't necessarily stick and that he'll regress back to that kind of career average. But you're looking at 26.8% O swing, so much better than league average, much lower than his career norm. And then that contact rate is up as well. So not only is he being more selective, but he is he's making more contact with better pitches. And I think we're seeing some of the results of that. As you mentioned, you know, there's small sample noise in here. He has a 52.5% ground ball rate. So he's hitting the ball on the ground a decent amount. He's got a 53.8% home run to fly ball. He's got 7 home runs. He's got 7 barrels. But again, he's only got 70 plate appearances. So his barrel rate per batted ball event is 17.5%, which is truly elite. And he's also got a 12.8% over 156 batted ball events, including a really nice max EV of 114.2. So there's a lot, I think, to like in that profile, especially with them giving him playing time every single day. That could be a real difference maker. You look at his bat X projection, you know, in 250 plate appearances, they have 250, 9 home runs, 30 runs, 31 RBI. You know, you multiply that by 2, you're looking at, you know, 250, 18 home runs, 60-60. And from a catcher, that's really, you know, good over the course of a full season, that's huge. That's a major difference maker. That's like, you know, Danny Jansen, but probably better. And so, yeah, I really like him a lot. You know, potential difference maker. I'm in a little bit of a bind, or not a bind, but like in my OC, I think I have his brother and JTR are my two catchers. So I'm not really looking, but he could be really big, especially in those deeper leagues where things are rough.
Yeah, that's why I tweeted it out yesterday, and I got a lot of feedback from people that don't play in 12-team leagues, apparently, because I said, you know, we both like to pay for catchers. And I'm in a similar scenario, not on all my leagues, but I have a lot of like Contreras or JTR or Varsho, like Grandal, who I still believe in. Like there's a group of those guys where I'm not dropping them. But then in my other leagues, I was like with Fad Kelly for the Arizona. I've dropped him everywhere for like William Contreras and others. Like I'll just start just rotating that position if I have to. And I tweeted out that maybe this wasn't the year to pay up for catchers, because catchers have been kind of just blah all over the board. And there's like, obviously William Contreras is a game changer, but Danny Jansen has been available. Like there's been a bunch of guys that have all of a sudden stepped up that you could stream right now, mm-hmm. is what I was trying to say. But I get it, in 15s, you can't, like, you're not going to get that same luxury, but in 12s, like every week you look at the waiver wire, like Elias Diaz was on waiver wires this week and he's got, they have 7 games in Coors. I know he doesn't play every day, but he was there. Like there's dudes all over the place at catcher right now in 12 teams and less. So it was interesting to me. And that was my point of my tweet. And that's why I like to explain it on the podcast, because I get more than 240 characters to get my point across. But it was just, it kind of just stood out to me about the options that are on the waiver wire. Obviously 12s are better for waiver wire fodder than 15s, but it just kind of makes you think back on your process of drafting. Like, did I need to take catchers early here? And I could have gone somewhere else. It's all Captain Hindsight stuff, but it was just something that kind of stood out to me when breaking that down. All right. I'm going to give you the floor on this one, Toby. Cole Sulcer picked up in 86 leagues, as high as 187, as low as a dollar. As Toby hinted at earlier, he blew a save, gave up four runs, faced four batters tonight. And he's coming off of one save last week and looked like he was getting things together, but tonight happened. So what's your thoughts on Cole Sulcer right now, Toby?
Yeah, I mean, that was so disappointing. It really felt like he had it locked down. When I was looking at him, I was just so... The skills were fantastic heading into tonight, you know, so he had the 250 ERA, which went up to 450 after today, the 117 whip, 20 strikeouts and 18 innings pitched, you know, so all the like general ones that we look at, he's got the two saves, but, you know, reasonable BABIP at 286, actually higher than his career average. The strand rate was low at 71.4%, so it's not like he'd been lucky. And then when you look at the other metrics, 14.1% swinging strike rate, that's very good. In zone contact, you know, down a little bit at 85.1%, but he's got a history of having really good in zone contact. His O swing was the highest of his career at 39%, getting ahead of batters. He had a 16.9% K minus walk rate, which isn't fantastic for a reliever, but like the skills are all there that said, nah, this guy's probably been a little bit unlucky. When it comes to it, well, that luck certainly continued today. I mean, just having him come in the seventh inning in Coors, like, it just came out of nowhere to me, because the last two save opportunities that they've had, they brought him in and it was looking to be a save opportunity before he came in. So just one of those disheartening things. And it just shows the challenges of the wire at this point when it comes to closers. It's just so hard to know and to feel comfortable and confident that somebody has the role, even when they've gotten two saves in a row. So I bid for him really high. I mean, I bid $59 in two leagues. One was an OC where I was uncontested in my $59 bid for him. And then the other one was in my super. So one of my high stakes leagues, I was really excited to get really my only, I think like kind of, I'll say that combined, I have two. I think I have like Pagan, Jorge Lopez, and now Sulcer. So I felt like, oh, well, I've kind of pieced together two full closers, but apparently not. So we'll see. You know, I would not be surprised to see him get another save opportunity later on this week, just because after he blew a save opportunity 2 weeks ago, I think, you know, they brought him right back in. So bizarre situation, really unfortunate for people who put a lot of money into Cole Sulcer, but we'll see what happens from here on out.
Question for you here. Those that did put a lot of money into Cole Sulcer, they get this experience on night one. A lot of people would want to rage drop Cole Sulcer. What do you recommend to people on that one? Like, is it a 1 week rental? Obviously we have more action to see this week. He might just be a complete failure, but are you more inclined to almost wait longer with him now to try to get your money back? Or are you willing to just get rid of him that quickly? I just want to put this out there, because people do have thoughts like that.
I think it always depends on the league. Like if you're in a really shallow league, you know, not necessarily rage dropping him, but just thinking about the fact that, hey, like he probably doesn't have the job exclusively and he's on the Marlins. So that doesn't make him super interesting in like a shallower league. But in a 15 team league, I think, yeah, you just see how things play out over the course of the week. He is in Coors, which is just rough. I mean, you know, a lot of people have struggled there. So I wouldn't take it, you know, I wouldn't take that too much against him. But I think you just kind of see how the next week or so plays out. Again, I wouldn't be surprised to see him get a save opportunity, you know, later this week. And hopefully he'll have two clean saves, you know, by Sunday. And then I'll feel a lot better.
Perfect. Crossing fingers on this one. Let's go back to Chicago, 9-game week on tap. Frank Schwindel picked up in 85 leagues, as high as $64, as low as a dollar. Since he kind of got demoted, basically like put on timeout because he never really got on the bus to leave, got called back up immediately because of an injury, he's hitting like over 280, four home runs. striking out like 17% of the time. He's starting to remind us a little bit of what Frank Schwindel looked like last season when a lot of us liked him for fantasy purposes. And he's playing every day, which is what you want to see, because that was kind of, he was platooning a lot beforehand, hitting in the middle of the Cubs lineup. He was another guy. Like I said, I focused a lot on these guys playing a lot of games this week, and I liked Schwindel a lot. He wasn't available in a ton of my leagues. He was already kind of sniped up places, but I put bids in where I could. I think when we recap later, I think I got him in like one, maybe two leagues, but I'm willing to ride him with this kind of streak coming up. So what's your thoughts on Frank Schwindel?
Yeah, he was definitely a target for me as well, where he was available. Actually, last week, like you mentioned, I got him in, I think I ended up getting him in Barf or in TGFBI or something like that. I don't know if I have him on any of my mains, and I also have him on a Dynasty League. But yeah, I mean, I think he's fine. Like, I think, you know, we kind of saw the best that we're going to see from him at the end of last year. And now he's just kind of, he's pretty middling, pretty replacement level. And so I think you just kind of use him for these weeks where he's got really good matchups and where he's playing a lot of games and he's hitting in the middle of the order. So he's got all those things going for him. And he seems to be on a little bit of a heater, or at least he was last week and a little bit the week before that. So, you know, you just kind of ride that out. And then as he fades, then you just kind of fade him and move on if there's something better on the wire at this point.
Yep, most definitely with you on that one. Next up is a guy you picked up everywhere a couple weeks ago. I jumped on board a little bit last week and even more so this week. Jeffrey Springs picked up in 84 leagues, as high as $79, as low as $1, 6 strong against the Yankees his last time out. He's going 80-plus pitches his last couple outings, 6 or more Ks in his last 2 starts. They're lengthening them out. They're going to pitch them. Like, things are looking good here. And you talked about it a couple weeks ago. I talked to Nick Pollock on the show on Wednesday. We looked into his changeup as well. It's filthy. It's absolutely filthy what he's doing. There's a little bit of concern when you dig into the profile that if the changeup's not working, it might not be a nice night. But those are the breaks. But overall, the dude's awesome. You're way ahead of the curve here, Toby. So any more thoughts on Jeffrey Springs?
Yeah, no, I still love him. I didn't start him in most places last week. I did have him in a couple places just because the Yankees are a pretty right-handed heavy lineup, and I think he's going to be effective against righties. I actually should probably look to see if that bears out in his platoon splits, but oh well. So yeah, I just really like him. He's been lucky. I mean, don't get me wrong, 213 BABIP, 92% strand rate. Those things will even out over a period of time, but I love the skills. 14.6% swinging strike rate, 42.6% O swing, which is just absolutely fantastic. Dominating in the zone at 79.5%. K minus walk is 21.1%. He's not walking guys. He's striking guys out. I just love it. And I've loved it since I saw him. He's pitching against the Angels. I mean, he's had a rough go of it too, which is the surprising thing. Like, you think like, oh, maybe he was beating up on some not so great teams. He's faced the Yankees as a starter, I should say. He's faced the Yankees. Actually, let me just make sure. Yeah. The Yankees, Baltimore, Toronto, the Angels, and not like, you know, your Angels of the past week. This is when they were like in their peak form, you know, Trout, Otani, Rendon, everybody. And then he faced the Mariners, but he only went 2.2 innings. So he's faced like arguably 2 or 3 of the top 5 offenses in baseball. And he's done well, and he's very efficient. He's not walking guys, which is nice, because, you know, he's gone on a little bit of a pitch limit. I don't know if he's hit 100 yet, but
no, he's only gone 80 his last two.
80 is around 80 or so. Around 80, but he's been efficient. So it could go bad. It'll probably go bad in one start. You know, maybe it'll be this week. I hope not, because I got him in everywhere because he's going against Texas, although they're hitting well so far today. So we'll see what happens, but I really love it. I really like what he's about and what he's doing.
Yeah. I didn't play him last week either, so I feel you there. I was not putting him into that Thunderdome, but we'll see how he does against Texas. We're all rooting for him. Jacob Junis from the San Francisco Giants, 2-step this week at Philadelphia, at Miami, picked up in 82 leagues, as high as 76, as low as 1. He's been serviceable, 5 or more innings at every start, 2 earned runs or less, and 4 out of his or 5 of his last 6 starts. Almost Ks aren't there. Ks aren't great, let's put it that way. But he's been serviceable, very serviceable. 2 starts on tap. I wasn't overly aggressive on Jacob Junis because that Philadelphia start terrifies me. But I'm also a pessimistic Giants fan. So what's your thoughts on Jacob Junis this week, who many people are obviously in on?
Yeah, you know, I've had him on my teams for like 4 or 5 weeks at this point. When he, right after he first came up, I added him in a few 15s. I have him in my lineups. These starts scare the heck out of me. I don't love what I see necessarily. I mean, he's on the Giants, so he's got that going for him. But you mentioned the Ks are low. You know, his swinging strike rate is at 10.3%. But if you look at it, I think over his last like 5 or 3 or something, it's definitely gone down considerably. He's getting chases. The Z contact is awful at 91.5%, and I hate it. I hate having guys who can't dominate in the zone because it means they're kind of, you know, they're playing around at the edges. They're playing around at the edges. And sometimes if you don't have your best stuff going for you, then you're walking guys. And he's always been homer prone. So we'll see if that kind of rears its head. I'm definitely nervous about the start. The one thing that I will say, his CSW is 30.9%, which is really strong. So, you know, he gets a lot of called strikes, and he always has gotten more called strikes than swinging strikes. So there's a little bit of hope there, you know, but say your prayers this week because, man, I am not feeling super hot about it, but we'll see what happens.
Yep, I'm pulling for him, but I am nervous as all get up. Trust me on that one. Watching that ball fly out of Philadelphia today, I could see it happening with Jacob tomorrow. Very much in play. Here we go. Tyrone Taylor time. This is a big one. Like anybody listening to any preseason content, I think most of us all love Tyrone Taylor. And then the Brewers went and got Andrew McCutchen, went and traded for Hunter Renfroe. And you're just like, well, there goes that option again. But now Taylor's got playing time because McCutchen's been, well, doing his thing. But Renfroe to the IL, which is big. Lorenzo Cain's. So Tyrone Taylor added in 79 leagues, as high as 71, as low as a dollar. 2 more home runs today in the doubleheader against the Cubs. Over his last 10 games before today, 3 home runs, hitting 351 and only striking out 12.5% of the time. He is finding his groove playing every day, which is beautiful. He's got a power. He's got speed. He's got a little bit of everything from Milwaukee. Let's just hope this sticks, Toby, because I like Tyrone Taylor a lot. I know you do as well.
Yeah. So if we had the podcast last week, I would have been celebrating because, ladies and gentlemen, I got Tyrone Taylor in 5 of my 6 biggest leagues last week. If you were watching, he played 6 out of the last 7 heading into last Sunday, I want to say. He might have sat on Sunday, I think, or on Monday of last week. I can't remember, but he was playing. And because Lorenzo Cain sucks now, like Lorenzo Cain doesn't look like he can do anything. His K rate's way up. He's not hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball on the ground just a ton. Like, he's not doing anything. And so Tyrone Taylor had really supplanted him as the pretty much everyday outfielder heading into last week. So I picked him up in 5 out of 6. It's been a beautiful week. It's been a beautiful start to this week. When we talk about guys that can be difference makers, when you look at his BADX projection, you know, for 329 plate appearances, he's at 244 with 12 home runs and 4 steals. So over 600 plate appearances, you're looking at 20 plus home runs, probably 7 to 8 steals. And that's huge. You know, this is a potential, if things go right, 2010 caliber player over the course of a full season, playing against a relatively weak pitching division, hitting in the heart of the Brewers lineup, because it's, you know, while it sometimes feels like a good lineup, it's not really a good lineup. And so, I really loved adding him. You know, he doesn't strike out a lot. Like, his career is 20.7%, you know, in 450 plate appearances for his career, he's 18-7. So again, looking at that 20 to 25, 8 to 10 type of thing, contact rate is really solid. He does chase a little bit, which is a little bit disappointing, but, career barrel rate around 8%, right around 8% this year, you know, max EV around 110. So he checks all of the boxes. And so I was really lucky last week. The only challenge is the one league I didn't get him in is my biggest league. And I lost out on him for $2, 16 to 14. Oh. So that's been a little bit sad, but wonderful. And I'm really excited to have him because with the Renfro injury, it gives him that opportunity to play and to earn that playing time. And he had a wonderful catch today. I've seen him make some really nice defensive plays earlier in the year. So I don't know whether he's a good defensive player, but he's certainly at least doing well enough so that he's not a liability there. And you'd much rather have him in the lineup than Lorenzo Cain at this 100%. Point in their careers, I think.
Yep, I'm with you. So let's hope he gets to keep that job because a lot of DC teams will be very happy with those moves right there, let alone season longs where you're smart enough to get him early like Toby was. This is why Toby is good at what he does. Let's talk about the next one up here. Ronzi Contreras of the Pittsburgh Pirates already was pumped when he got called up. Made two starts last week, five innings in both outings, two earned runs and one, zero in the other. 3Ks, 5Ks, walks and control have been his issue so far. That's the biggest thing you'll hear about Ronzi Contreras. I have zero shares of Ronzi Contreras. What's your thoughts on Ronzi Contreras?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a tough one. I mean, I like the skills a lot. He's tough only because he was gone in pretty much all 15-team leagues, and then he was available in 12-team leagues. But I think the challenge is it's like in a 15-team league, he looks amazing because the skills are good and it's just so shallow, the pitching. But in a 12-teamer, it's like you could probably stream a guy who's fairly equivalent on a regular basis there. The good, you know, 16.9% K-minus walk rate, 13.1% swinging strike rate, 37.4% O-swing, which is great. He's in good in the zone, 281.7% Z-contact. Only challenge, like you mentioned, is the control and ability to throw strikes. He's only got a 37% zone percentage. So even though he's getting ahead of batters and he's getting them to chase, he's still running into some control issues there. Little bit of luck with the 227 BABIP and the 86.4% strand rate, but looks pretty good. I think one of the things that I'm trying to weigh a little bit more now too is with these guys, like I'm really trying to be thoughtful and this week I feel like I've gone amiss already is like, there's certain guys who like, you know, there's just, especially on really bad teams, like even if they're pretty good, if they're not going volume, it's really hard to get wins. So if you think you're going to get a win, maybe one out of every four starts from a guy, then you start to see a lot more downsides. And so I'm trying to be a little bit more cognizant of that this year because, you know, I just think sometimes just throwing that middle reliever in there or throwing that added closer or closer spec in there with good skills, you know, you're only missing out on maybe a K or two, and there's just a lot more, less, you know, volatility. So, yeah, but I thought he's a good ad generally.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. The comments you made there about this, the bad team pitchers basically and playing. When we talk about pickups this week, I picked up a handful of relievers because I just didn't like my other options. That was how we were going to roll with it, and we'll talk about that for sure. But, yeah, Ronzi was one. Like, I like the talent. I just didn't want to go in on him either because there's still too many questions for me there. Not going deep, and that's just not something I want to deal with right now. Here's another guy, Matthew Liberatore of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's looked good. Five innings in his last outing, 6Ks. But again, how long is he going to go out there? How long is he going to stay up? He's there this week because I got 8 games, but you know, you can see him go back down at a given notice. Stud pitching prospect, just like Contreras. But to me, there were still a lot of questions with Liberatore, and I'm willing to be wrong on these kind of things more often than not. So I was not in on him. Talent's great, no doubt in that. But like I did my Mackenzie Gore thing already. I didn't need to do it with anybody else. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I have a rule about picking up guys with swinging strike rates under 5%. I just don't do it, Bubba. I just cannot.
It's a good rule. Good rule to have.
Do it. He's got a 4.4% swinging strike rate. You know, K minus walk is 9.1%. O swing 27.6%, Z contact 86.1%. So he's worse than league average in all of those by a pretty healthy margin outside of that Z contact. So there's just like, for me, just warning sirens going off that something bad is potentially going to happen here. You know, maybe not. I mean, you know, the projections don't love him, you know, 4.7. 4.34 to 4.77 with a 1.35 to 1.38 whip. I think the whip is going to be, you know, an issue. He didn't have overwhelming strikeout rates in the minors. You know, he did have 28.4% so far this year, but the two previous seasons, a combined 200 innings with 23.7 and 22.9. So if that's what you're doing in the minors, I think what you end up getting is you end up getting worse than that in the majors. And so now you're talking low 20%, high teens, and just have no interest whatsoever in that. And so, again, I've made fun of guys like that before and had it look really bad, like just get it, you know, just pie in the face or whatever. But I'm just willing to kind of make those decisions. And I think more often than not, you're going to end up on the right side of things. And by that, I mean like 90% of the time when a guy, even through just nine innings, has a 4.4% swinging strike rate, he's not really fooling guys at all. There's very few like pitchers in the majors who over the course of two full outings will have a 4.4% swinging strike rate. Like that's like, if he throws 80 pitches and he has four swinging strikes, Bubba, that's above a 4.4% swinging strike rate. So
it's that bad. Yeah,
it's not good. It's not good.
It's not good at all. You know what is good is Mookie Betts just hit a bomb. 15th homer of the season. The guy is unconscious right now. Man. Like, absolutely unconscious. But I digress. We'll talk a couple more guys here that will go over our moves of the week, hit up some listener questions. So let's go to Victor Robles. This was an interesting one for me. Picked up in 69 leagues, as high as 114, as low as a dollar. He's hitting 257 on the year. He's got four steals over his last three games, five steals on the season. Still no power with Victor Robles, hitting at the bottom of the Washington lineup. But he's getting on and stealing bags right now, and that has some weight to it, if that's what you're looking for. I'm not looking for that per se, but he's fantasy relevant again right now, Toby, which is quite surprising from where things have been recently.
Yeah, for sure. I tried to dive in a little bit and see what we were getting out of Victor, and I really couldn't see anything different. I think the 364 BABIP, which is about 60 points higher than his career average, you know, his line drive rate is actually, it's slightly higher than his career average, but the ground ball rate is actually up. He's not hitting with any authority. You know, the home run per fly ball rate the last 3 years has been 7.7, 2.4, and then 5.6 this year. You know, barrels, he does have three, but it's only a 3.6% barrel rate. You know, the max EV is down for the fourth consecutive year, 110.5, 109.2, 108.3, 106.8. That's after 84 batted ball events. The overall exit velocity is just god awful. The hard hit rate is god awful. I think that we probably just saw like the best stretch of hitting that he's going to have the rest of the season potentially. So, you know, again, there's hope there. There's that glimmer, but yeah, I just didn't see enough different from the profile to actually take a swing at it.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised when I saw his name pop up. So popped, I've heard his name mentioned a lot this weekend. And I was like, it's still Victor Robles, right, guys? Like, we're basically paying for steals right now. If that's what you need, okay. But there's not much else coming your direction with Victor Robles. That's going to help you, at least. Let's put it that way. All right, Toby, if you're ready, let's do some Fab recaps for the week. Who did you
Fab
in your leagues?
All right. You're going to hear a lot of Cal Mitchell, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of Cal Mitchell.
Tell about us why to be you grabbed.
Blowing up your, I don't know, earbuds, earphones, earplugs.
Why did you add Cal Mitchell in so many places?
So the reason I added Cal Mitchell in so many places, projection for Cal. I like to think that his full name is California.
I was going to go with Calvin, but okay.
You're probably right, but sometimes
I like California. I'll let you keep going
California
with your thing.
Mitchell. That's a pretty sweet name, California Mitchell. So if there are any like babies that are born this year that are called California and they go by Cal, I'm going to guess it's probably listeners of the podcast for sure. So Cal Mitchell is hitting leadoff against righties and sixth against lefties. He has playing time. He had a really good start to the minor league season. Five home runs, six steals, 306 batting average. He's always had a pretty good batting average. You can see that in the projections. 252 batting average, which, you know, again, like you're like, oh, 252 batting average. That's nothing. Like that's sucks, but it's actually like pretty good right now in baseball that we see right now. Three home runs, two steals. Heard some positive things about him, you know, this year in terms of how he was doing. His WRC plus was the best of his career in Triple A in his entire minor league career, you know, at 128, doesn't strike out a lot, you know, decent plate discipline. So all of those things kind of had me thinking, ah, well, he's kind of worth throwing a little bit at. So I had like $17 bids, I think, in most places. So I got him for $17, dropped Kyle Isbell, added Jonathan Daza and dropped Brett Phillips for $11, backup of six. And Daza, it was tough because he was not in the lineup today. And so I have him, I got him in this league and it's my biggest league. And it's the league that I share with Brian Slack. And I was like, and we were like texting and it was like, oh man, Daza's not in the lineup. Do we like, he's played six of the last seven. So it's like, assume he plays the next three, you know, that would be something. And the other option was like, I think Rougned or Doerr or something like that. So
I hope you played him.
So we went with him.
Good.
Which was nice because it eased a little bit of the burn on Cole Sulzer because he did have the bases clearing double off of Cole Sulzer. So that was nice. Picked up Franchy Cordero for seven, dropped Eli White, which, you know, he went off today. Oh, well. And then added Daniel Hudson for $4 with a $2 backup, dropped Matt Barnes, and then added Rougned Odor for $2, $1 backup, dropped Jonathan VR. So with that, like Franchy, you know, he's been hitting well. I mean, he's still got a lot of the issues that he's had in the past, but I think they're slightly better this year. Let me just check. Maybe like the BABIP, I don't think was ridiculous, but maybe I'm thinking about another player because I look at a lot of players. Oh, it was 340, but that's right around where he's been in his career. Yeah, the strikeout rate was way down. The O swing was really nice. You know, contact rate is higher than it has been throughout his career. Nice hard hit rate, seven barrels, 112 max EV. It all looked pretty good, and he hit against the last lefty. So I thought, hey, you know, maybe he's going to play every day. And then with Daniel Hudson, you know, Kimbrel's been a little shaky. You know, he got the save yesterday, I think, but he did give up a run. His line is not pretty. I mean, he's like 4.5 ERA, 1.4 whip, something like that. So it's just a wing and a hope and a prayer that maybe this is the week that Kimbrel falls apart and Hudson takes it. But, you know, I doubt very highly that's going to happen. And then Odor has been hitting pretty well recently, and he's got seven this week. And so I was into the kind of Orioles middle infield here. In my next league, I added Cole Sulzer for $59, backup at 32, drop Matt Barnes, added Cal Mitchell, drop Lane Thomas, added Kyle Farmer, dropped Freddie Peralta. That's a sad one, but you know, Freddie's gone for 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, 8 weeks we're talking about, you know, end of July, early August, probably
at the earliest.
They got to ramp him up. They're going to take it very easy with him because they're going to want him for the playoffs. And I'm not really worried about them making the playoffs in the division that they're in. I just think there's too many things that have to go absolutely right. And he's got to pitch well. He hasn't pitched well really this year. So all of those things need to go well for me to really regret doing this. And I have three other guys on that team who are on the IL, and I just can't. I need that spot. So that was sad. The sadder thing too was that I liked Ramon Urias more this week than Kyle Farmer because of the seven games, and I botched my fab. I had Urias for less, and then what does Urias do today? He hits a two-run jack, I think. So that was a little bit sad, but hopefully Kyle Farmer will do better. Although I don't think I'm gonna start him. So that was just a awful mistake. In another league, I added Trevor Larnach, dropped Matt Barnes, $37, 29 backup, added Cal Mitchell, dropped Bruce Zimmerman, $13. I love Bruce Zimmerman, but the skills haven't been great recently. He has had a really rough go of it, but like swinging strike rate's under 10%. He's on the Orioles, which isn't great. He does have two good matchups, but he just wasn't making that team. either week. So I moved on from him. We got next league. We have added Nico Horner for $23. Dropped Michael Chavis. That has worked out swimmingly so far. Yep. Added Cal Mitchell. Dropped Kevin Smith. A lot of Cal Mitchell. Literally like every place you could imagine. Added Cole Sulter. No backup bid. $59. Dropped Marco Gonzalez. Marco's getting a little questionable. I have him everywhere, but he's a little bit questionable. He's just not getting the strikeouts. Like if you can't get strikeouts, there's a lot that can go wrong and not a lot that can go right, which is unfortunate. So I'm holding on to him in 15 teamers, but in 12s, it was time. I did add Christopher Morel, dropped Jonathan VR, $12 with a $1 backup bid. Then I got Tyrone Taylor, dropped Yusei Kikuchi, $4, no backup bid. And then I added Ryan Yarbrough, dropped Freddie Peralta in that league as well, which was a foolish move. I think it's one of those things where I wasn't sure if I was going to get Sulzer. So I wanted to make sure that I had another pitcher in a line. Then I got him and I was like, I can't even play Yarbrough. He doesn't even fit in this team now that I have Sulzer. So that was just a bonehead move on my part, but that happens. TGFBI added Cal Mitchell, dropped Lane Thomas, added Lorenzo Cain, dropped Bruce Zimmerman. Cain has the 8 games this week. And, you know, like he, with Renfro out, he's been playing more. There's the possibility for steals. And I really need steals in this league. And then I also picked up Luis Renjifo and dropped Jonathan VR. And then in our shared league of Barf, what did I do here? Added Christopher Morel. Oh, I got him in Barf too. Dropped Brett Phillips, $53, backup of 26. I need speed bad. I got Trevor Larnach too, 37, backup of 7. The Tigers also have 8 games this week. And I think Larnach is playing against lefties as well at this point, just because the Twins are so beat up. And then I added Jonathan Daza for 11, dropped Bruce Zimmerman. That wraps up my fab for the week.
For me in TGFBI, I added Glenn Otto, dropped Chase Silseth. Otto got the dunk well tonight. $19, $9 runner-up. Also added JT Brubaker, dropped Andres Munoz, 13 with a $1 runner-up bid. Go down to Barf here. We've got added Cole Calhoun, dropped Alfonso Rivas, 31 with a runner-up of 27. Added Tanner Houck, dropped Tyler Wells, 17-5 on that one. OCQ, I added Jeffrey Springs, dropped Kyle Hendricks, 22 with a runner-up of 21. Christopher Morel dropped Willie Castro, 17-4. Added Cole Calhoun, dropped Andres Jimenez, 16-0. So that was fun. The other RotoWire OC, Adam Morel dropped Lamont Wade Jr., 22 with no runner-up bid. Added Nico Horner, dropped Hung Sung Kim, 14-7. Added Devin Williams.
Nice Horner pickup there. Yeah, I like OC. I wish I had done that.
Added Devin Williams, dropped Kyle Hendricks, got Devin Williams for $7, runner-up of 2. I know Hader's the guy, but like I said earlier, I'll take what Williams can offer right about now compared to some other starters.
Especially an eight game week, you know he's going to throw 4 times probably this week.
And if there's one game, but like they could both get a save in certain situations, so we'll see. A satellite league, added Frank Schwindel, dropped McCutcheon, 23-12. Added Kyle Lewis, dropped Brandon Belt, 21-0. He had 0 for Kyle Lewis. Added JT Brubaker, dropped Jake McGee, 7-0. A lot of unattested bids. Love them. All right, four OCs.
Know what I just saw?
What?
When I was looking at the OC was I sat Pavin Smith.
He already went Yahtzee.
Three run homer. Yep. Oh, man, as I was looking at that OC to see if I had Nico Horner on mine like you did, smart guy.
All right. Next OC here, added Cole Calhoun, dropped Felix Bautista, 17-15. Added Nico Horner, dropped Andrew McCutcheon. Mm. And then this is one I put bids in everywhere. I added JP Fireisen, dropped Jose Quintana, 11-6. Fireisen splitting the role in Tampa Bay, but his overall peripherals stat line is beautiful, so I'll take that. Patrick Wisdom dropped Yadiel Hernandez, 17-0. Fireisen dropped Kyle Bradish, 8-0. Love these unopposed bids. Two more OCs, and then I'm done. Added Jeffrey Springs for 31, dropped Ranger Suarez, $28 runner-up. Added Cole Calhoun, dropped Stephen Kwan, 17-7. Added Brendan Donovan, dropped Merrill Kelly, 12-9. And then I added Elias Diaz for $1. And then last but not least, Jeffrey Springs added for $31, runner-up of two. added JT Brubaker for $6, runner-up of zero. So fun stuff. But yeah, all over the boards when it comes to Fab and what people are paying for Fab. So we'll see how that goes going forward. But no Cal Mitchell for me. No Cali love for me.
Bummer. Well, we can... Well, I'll enjoy his 0-for-3 day so far.
All right. Let's get some listener questions here. We'll start in the YouTube chat here. James D says, thoughts on Nick Plummer. I know Plummer at least went deep tonight. I get another big hit, too, for the Mets. And I'll be honest, that was the first time I've heard of him, so I looked into him this evening. But do you have anything on Nick Plummer? Just got called up recently and playing pretty decent the last couple days, but I'm not overly optimistic.
Yeah. Let's see. He's projected for a 199 batting average with one home run and six steals over 49 plate appearances, which is a total of 6-6.
He's already got two home runs this year.
Or actually 12-12 over 600 plate appearances. I know, right? He's already got a 112.8 max EV. I mean, that's pretty
nice.
Come
on, Derek Cardi.
Let's see minors what he did this year. This year he's 250, six home runs, two steals, high K rate throughout. So maybe he's just kind of like a
Patrick Wisdom
guy who strikes out a lot and yeah, hits for some pop. But I mean, even last year, 15 home runs in close to 500 plate appearances. There's nothing honestly that really stands out about him at all. I would not anticipate that this is going to, that it'll stick around.
It's kind of my thoughts. I wouldn't get too excited just yet. Scott Harris has a question. We kind of hit on him at the beginning of the show, Scott, but do you think Michael Harris will be a good addition to the Braves?
I mean, baseball addition, potentially. He's really fast, so I'm assuming that he's a decent, he'll be a decent outfielder as well. You know, again, like fantasy impact, I think is limited a little bit by where he's hitting the order, but if he's good enough, then he'll move up a little bit at least. So speed, a little bit of pop, nice overall profile, but I just wasn't as aggressive as I think a lot of people were very aggressive with Michael Harris. And I think part of that is just the speed. Like there's not a lot of guys that are going to come through that are going to have the type of kind of like elite speed that he has. So if you're short in steals, then you're trying to make a move now and make up some lost ground.
For sure. A couple more questions here. Larry Cardosa asks, Teoscar Hernandez, 24 games, two home runs, nine RBIs, 26 strikeouts, and 88 at bats. Is it panic time or buy low time? I'm in the buy low aspect of this one with Teoscar Hernandez. I think he's still kind of getting his sea legs out from under him. And as long as he can get healthy or stay close to healthy, that team is starting to heat up together right now. And that's what's going to happen. They're all going to start clicking, leaving Lourdes. I had a good week last week for the first time in a while. Vladito hit two home runs last week. First time since his three home run game in New York. Like, I got confident in the Jays getting things done, and Teoscar will be a part of it. So I would buy low.
Yeah, I mean, 217, BABIP. The ground ball rate is way up, but he has been injured. I would take the same approach that you have where it's like he's still in spring training. You know, like he didn't have a full spring training. Like you mentioned, he got injured right at the beginning of the season. So he's got the unfortunate situation where he's got to have spring training against guys that are in a much better place in the course of their year and their course of their ramp up, you know, with the pitchers and everything. So, I mean, a little bit concerned about that, but I think once he's able to make that adjustment, he'll be fine. You know, 12.5% home run per fly ball. So everything's like he's underperforming everything that he's done so far. And so I just think he's partially been unlucky and partially just needs time to ramp up. And when he does ramp up, he'll be fire, I'm sure.
Yep. I'm with you there. And then last but not least, Mr. Todd Whitestone, Mr. at Telestar 7 asks, and he butters us up.
Very flattering
question. Yeah. You guys are smart, good looking, and insightful. Wow. And I added the wow. So what do you think of these pitchers as options in rest of season 15 team mixed rotos? Aaron Ashby, Garrett Whitlock, Spencer Strider, Tanner Houck. What are your thoughts on those four?
Yeah, I mean, I think with all of them, like, kind of volume is a little bit of a question. Strider got the start that everybody had been wanting him to get today. He gave
Edwin
up five
Rios runs. Just had a home run.
Edwin Rios did just to shut me up. was it a solo shot or?
Solo shot, opposite field.
Okay. So, I mean, Strider's look good from a skills perspective. We talked about him extensively a couple weeks ago. You know, really nice K-minus walk, really nice swinging strike rate, really nice O-swing, but I think the four innings is the most that he's pitched so far this year. Yeah, he pitched four in one other instance, but he doesn't really have the volume. So I think there's a lot more downside, and we saw it. I think when we also spoke about him 2 weeks ago, I said that he has a zero home run per nine, which is crazy because his ground ball rate is so low. Well, he doesn't have a home run per nine of zero anymore. It's still going to be super low. It's at 0.31. So I would expect some more regression on that front to come his way. But I think he's worth taking a shot at in a 15 team league just because the skills are really nice and, you know, there's upside there. Who else was it?
Ashby, Whitlock, Strider, Hauk.
Oh, Ashby for sure. I mean, he looked nasty today. He's got, I think, the benefit from him, at least in the start that I saw today, is he had that really nice changeup he could throw to righties that was effective. And he's also got that slider or curveball, which I think is his kind of preferred go-to pitch. He struggled a little bit this year, hasn't been as good as he was last year, but I think it just needs a little bit of time. You know, he's got decent velo from that left side, and everything looks nice, and it's kind of working its way up. The projections really like him too. 3.63 ERA for the bat, which is nice. So yeah, I like Ashby for sure. I remember the question the most out of all those guys there. Whitlock was the next one.
Yep.
Whitlock, let's just see what Garrett is doing. I know he started off really strong, but then he's struggled a little bit since. 44. Yeah, I mean, everything looks really solid there. Like, you know, again, I'm not sure how much of this is starter versus reliever, but, you know, 32.1% O swing, 84.7% Z contact, 20.5% K minus walk, 12.8 swinging strike rate. So I'd say like a really solid, good starter. But again, I want to see, let's see his game log. So he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 starts. He's got 7 starts. So let's look at what his numbers are over his last 7 games. Just because we want to be thorough with such a wonderful intro to that question that Todd had for us. Let's try to be as thorough as possible. All right. So Z contact way up over his last 7 games. So these are all starts. 87.1% below league average. His O swing is down to 31%, right at league average. His K rate still 26.2%, which is great. Swinging strike rate still 11.9%, which is strong. Walk rate up to 7.1%. So still really good, but struggling, not really as effective inside the zone. Let's see how far his volume is. His velocity has fallen. Yeah. So his velo, he's averaged 95.5, which is still good for a starter, but definitely far down from where he was last year when he was, 97 pretty consistently. So I'd say he looks like a solid starter, but I think there's some real downside there. I actually think that, you know, maybe he is the solution to the Red Sox bullpen, you know, if they can get enough healthy starters back in there, which I don't know their starters well enough. Rich Hill sucks. But and who's the fourth guy?
Hauk.
Oh, Tanner Hauk. Maybe Hauk replaces him. Tanner Hauk, we got 11.1% swinging strike, 11.6% K minus walk. He's walking a lot of guys, not striking out a lot of guys, not getting chases, struggling on pitches inside the zone. Not a lot of great stuff to see here. Less than 1 strikeout per inning. The velo's actually up, which is interesting. He's throwing the slider the same amount. But he's just kind of a two-pitch pitcher, isn't he? Is he just slider?
Heavy slider, yes.
Heavy slider fastball. Let's see. Slider, four seam. He throws the sinker. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, he's kind of just like, he's kind of just got the fastballs and the slider. And even the slider, I mean, 12.1% swinging strike rate. That's not great for a slider. So I don't know what's going on that. I don't know why he's not being as good. I mean, the velo is still there. He's throwing it as much. So I'm not sure what's going on with the velo or with Hauk and his slider. But if the slider's not even that good, then I don't know if he's that good.
Yeah, I go Aaron Ashby, as you mentioned. Yeah. That'd be my number one. And then I go Spencer Strider because if I'm thinking 15 team, I don't think Whitlock, Strider, or Hauk are going to give me consistently 5-plus innings. So give me the guy with the best stuff, and I got Spencer Strider. Mm-hmm. And then I go with Whitlock and then Hauk. I think Whitlock can be the closer by the end of the season. So
yeah,
that's where I go. Ashby, Strider, Whitlock, Hauk for me. But it is annoying. It'd be nice like at least like put an opener in front of these guys, let them go get a win or something. That'd be much more appreciated. It is what it is. It's the way of the world in baseball these days. We're going to see a lot more of that stuff, especially as the season goes on, guys get hurt. A lot more of that kind of up and down type action for sure. Well, that'll wrap us up, Toby. Any final thoughts as we are 9 weeks through the season?
I think no. I love this time of year. I absolutely love it. I always forget. I hate the beginning of the year. And then I love when we get into this part. You know, this is when it gets good, when there's kind of moving pieces, but you kind of know who guys are. You have a little bit more sense of the roles. You have all this stuff. And we still got, what, like 17 weeks of Fab left. We're a quarter way through the season. I love the rest of it. I really like it. So, I'm very excited, and I'm just really looking forward to riding on the back of Tyrone Taylor for the rest of the year. That's all I got.
That's beautiful. Well, we will see how that goes. Hopefully Taylor has a big week. Hopefully Cal Mitchell has a big week for you. And much
he's only
much
in more. One lineup, but I've got a lot of him, so
there we go. We'll see what happens with that one, but we'll be back with you guys next week as usual. Same bat time, same bat channel. Check out Toby on Twitter at batflipcrazy. I am on Twitter at BDentric, and until next time, this was Bubba and the Batflip, episode 126. Catch y'all later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.